all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm. You can reach us at 800-693-4800. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Assistant Professor of Human and Animal Interaction at Purdue University, Maggie O'Hare. Professor O'Hare, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're really, I think this may be the first time we're having an academic on to talk about psychiatric service dogs, so I'm really kind of excited to have somebody who's done some research in this field. But before we jump right into that research, I know you have your PhD, and why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and your areas of interest?
Absolutely. So I have my PhD in psychology with a focus on human-animal interaction, and I work in the Center for Human-Animal Bond at Purdue. So my entire job is focused around studying how we interact with animals and how it influences our health and well-being.
Well, that's a great area. I think anybody who's an animal lover, which I certainly am, would say, well, that's got to be like the best job in the world. You get to play with animals, but I suspect it's more than that.
Absolutely. I do think that a lot of times people suspect that I sit in my office playing with puppies all day, and I wish that were the case, but ultimately our job is to bring the strongest science that we can to this. So we work with interviewing people. We work with collecting physiological samples from people. We work with doing all sorts of measures so that we can capture scientifically what happens when we interact with animals and why and how, so that we can bring understanding to what's happening in these interactions that we have.
And I noticed in reviewing some of your academic research papers that you've done a fair bit of work in the autism area. Can you talk just briefly about that?
Sure. So that's actually where I got started in this human-animal interaction field, was while I was doing my PhD at the University of Queensland in Australia, actually. And I developed a classroom program with animals so that children with autism in inclusion classrooms could benefit from the comfort of having the animal there, from the social interaction they got with their peers around talking about and interacting with the animal, and all facets of how animals can help children with autism.
So tell us a little bit how that research interest of yours maybe moved over towards an area of interest to our veteran radio listeners, and that is the use of psychiatric service dogs or service dogs in general.
Sure, it's quite the transition. So ultimately, with my autism research, I was able to get funding from our National Institutes of Health, or NIH, to do a trial of how animals could help children with autism. And I published these findings, and they started to, be shown around. And what happened was, because I got a reputation from being able to effectively study how humans interact with animals, I was approached by the Habry Foundation, and they said, "This is an area where humans are interacting with animals. It's really important. People think it works, but we have no science behind it." And so they were really passionate about funding science on this topic. And along with Bayer Animal Health, these two funders connected me with Canines for Warriors, the service dog provider. And a partnership really stemmed from there and really transitioned me into learning about and studying the effects of service dogs, in fact, for veterans.
Were you surprised that there was little or no academic rigorous research on this topic? Because we all intuitively think, well, I'm sure it helps. But is there much research? Were you surprised at what you found?
Very surprised. So the first grant that I got from the Habry Foundation was actually just to what I anticipated would be study and collect all of the literature on service dogs for veterans. And it turns out that all of that literature was zero at the time. So
did you have to give the grant money back at that point?
So what I did, that's a great question. Don't talk to them about it. No. What I did was I looked at all of the literature on animals for any type of trauma. So not just dogs and not just veterans, but horses and small animals and children who might have been victims of abuse or victims of domestic violence. So other types of trauma and how animals could intervene, and use that as kind of a starting point. I had hoped that one of those types of trauma and types of animals would be service dogs for veterans, but I was very, very surprised to find that although we see this in the media and on the news and we hear great stories, at the time there was zero science behind it.
And you got connected with a service dog provider, I believe, in Florida, Canines for Warriors. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Sure. So Canines for Warriors specifically focuses on only providing dogs for military veterans and members who have PTSD. So they're based in Florida. That's where they have their campus. That's where they train and prepare the dogs. That's where people come to receive the dogs. But they actually provide dogs all throughout the United States.
And when you approach them, can you tell us sort of how do you design a study, or how do you move it from there's no real rigorous research to what I want out of this is something that others can rely on and begin making policy and decisions on?
Right. Well, that's one of the reasons we're so grateful to Canines for Warriors, because there are many service dog providers out there, and as you can imagine, they are busy and they are struggling in many ways to get funding and to, you know, get everything done. But this organization was willing to open their doors to us to say, you know what, we're going to take a chance on this partnership with a university and see what happens, and we're going to educate them on what we do and how to work with our clientele. So they have been wonderful to open their doors to us, and what that allowed us was to reach out to anyone who's applied to receive a dog from them. And that's where we take it over, and when we reach out to them, we invite them to complete several different types of measures. And these are measures that are used in clinical trials for things like medication or other treatments. We're using gold standard methods and measures on the same types of things you'd use for other treatments to see if a dog can make a difference.
And these dogs, just to recap for our veteran radio listeners, these service dogs are highly trained by somebody like a Canine for Warriors or other service dog providers. How did that factor into your thinking about how do I get a result here that people can rely on? Is the level of training of the dog important? Is the level of training of the veteran important? What sort of things went through your mind in that regards?
So many things went through our minds, and in fact, I can't take credit alone. I've got a wonderful team that works with me, and so the co-author on the recent paper was Carrie Rodriguez, and together, we and our team tried to think through every single question like that. What are the factors that might contribute to this? What about the dog? What about the human? What about the timing? What about their spouse and their family? What is every single piece of this puzzle, and how can we measure each part of it? So we really did try and think that through. And in our first study, we really focused just on the veteran themselves and their functioning. But in the follow-up study we're working on now, we're trying to address some of those additional questions about the dog. And so I think you made a great point that these dogs are highly trained. And that's kind of our baseline starting point. These findings are relevant for highly trained service dogs. And what that means is that dogs who have gone through a behavioral screening process, a temperament screening process, and then been prepared to live with a veteran and to do specific commands. And that's kind of the baseline for what we can say our findings are relevant to.
And Dr. O'Hare, what years was this study going on that you were participating in?
We collected our data in 2015.
Okay. And prior to that, for our listeners, I've explained to Dr. O'Hare here that I saw a article in Psychology Today by Dr. Hal Herzog, and I want to give him some credit for bringing Dr. O'Hare's recent research to light. And in that article, he discusses that VA was supposed to do some research on this area. Congress told them to do this in 2010, but it didn't really work out. I don't know if you know that story or not.
I know pieces of that story, and what I will say is that the study is still ongoing. So there were stops and starts, but they are up and running again with the VA study, and that study is a little bit different from ours because it's comparing a service dog to an emotional support dog. So that study will really be important to look at nuances between the trained tasks that are required to be a service dog as well as having public access, which a service dog but an emotional support dog doesn't in most places.
And going back to the service dogs and the study that you were conducting, can you tell us what the outcome was of your research?
Sure. So what we did is we had 141 veterans participate in the study, all had a diagnosis of PTSD, and about half of them currently had a service dog, while the other half did not. So we were able to compare what is life like for that group that has a dog compared to the group that doesn't. And what we found is that the group with a dog had clinically significantly lower levels of PTSD symptoms than the group that did not have a dog. So that was the first thing we wanted to look at, right? Because PTSD is why they're going for the dog. And we first confirmed, yes, that's lower if you have the dog. But we also looked at several other areas. We found that those with a dog had lower symptoms of depression. They had increased quality of life, so psychological well-being and life satisfaction and resilience. They also had a greater ability to participate in social activities, so willingness to get out of the house and engage with society. They felt less isolated. In terms of areas where we didn't see a difference, I think it's important to note that it wasn't every single area that they said is better. In terms of their physical health, quality of life, that didn't change. It was really targeted and focused to mental health changes.
And let me back you up because you used one of those academic phrases that those of us in the real world don't quite get. Your very first one was that there was clinically significant lower levels, I think you said, of PTSD. But can you go back and put that in English for us?
Yes, I would love to. And I was going to, but I didn't want to talk your ear off, so I'm glad you asked. So ultimately what that means is that when you have a treatment for PTSD or another disorder, clinicians will define an amount of change that they say is meaningful. So you might have PTSD, you go in for treatment, and your PTSD is a little bit less. But the clinicians define a level that they think is meaningful so that it was worth your time, ultimately. And that level is defined for any PTSD treatment, whether that be medication or other treatments. And this intervention met that level that clinicians would find meaningful in terms of a change.
Did your research provide any insight into how service dogs assisted veterans in their employment or work life?
They sure did. So that is another area where we found some interesting nuances. So in terms of what percentage were employed, it was not significantly different across groups. Where we did see the difference is that for those who were employed, if they had a dog, they were less likely to miss work due to health issues.
It seems to me that that's a really significant finding right there.
Yes, it certainly would, from an employment perspective and from a societal engagement perspective, I would agree with you.
And so much of how one feels about oneself is how they feel plugged into the rest of the world, right? If I'm working, mm-hmm. there's so much additional satisfaction I get out of life from interacting with the employers, mm-hmm. employees, my coworkers, mm-hmm. customers, clients, not just the paycheck, and I suspect that's where this big difference in quality of life might come from.
I think that's a great point, and I think it might really be tied into some of our other findings, you know, feeling more satisfied with life and more resilient. If you're able to get out of the house, go to work, make a paycheck, you're likely to increase in those other areas as well.
I think for those of us listening and from the veterans world and we're talking to Dr. Maggie O'Hare of Purdue University, who did this really seminal research on the service dog efficacy. We'll back up and we'll talk about the title of her paper in a moment. It would be important for employers to know that there's now research which says, hey, hire those guys, let them bring their dogs in. It has a big impact on everybody. I just think that's incredible to move it out of this is how I feel to there's enough research to say this really is statistically significant.
And that was absolutely our goal, to be able to capture that in a statistical and in a quantified way that people can understand. So it's no longer, you know, in the past we've had opinions and experiences and stories, which I think are wonderful. But some of our, you know, employers, policymakers, insurance providers are looking for data. And that's what was really important to us, to capture that quantifiable data.
Now, you published your research earlier this year, I think it was, in the Journal of Consulting and Clinical Psychology, which is put out by the American Psychology Association. Was that just here in early 2018?
Yes, it was. I believe it was in the February issue.
So here's the title, listeners. You'll get a kick out of this. And then I'll have the doctor explain what this means. The title of this article, which is why you probably missed it when you were cruising what to read, is Preliminary Efficacy of Service Dogs as a Complementary Treatment for Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder in Military Members and Veterans. Could you explain to us what preliminary efficacy and complementary treatments all about?
I would love to. It would be my pleasure. So to break it down, we've got preliminary. That means that this is the first step. We do not think that this study is the end-all be-all for this topic. It's a first step, so it's preliminary. We certainly need some follow-up work, which we're doing now. Then efficacy. That's basically asking whether or not this works. Is it effective? Does it work? Or does it not work? Because ultimately, we wanted to know that, right? If this doesn't work, many people spend a lot of time and resources trying to make this work for them. And if it didn't work, we thought that would be important to know. And then complementary treatment is also a really important part of that. And what that means is that this isn't just a standalone treatment. The findings do not suggest get a dog and drop everything else you're doing. The findings suggest add a dog to what you're currently doing, and you may see some positive changes.
Now, based on your experience in the field, and while this research was focused on dogs, because that's probably the biggest population, we've certainly on Veterans Radio had interviews and discussions with folks who have provided horses and other animals to veterans who claim that there's a value in that quality of life, emotional quality of life function. Based on your experience from everything from guinea pigs to dogs, is the animal the key, or is it something else?
That's a key question in the field right now. You know, is it the animal, or could we provide something else that's, you know, engaging and provides companionship? We don't have the answer to that yet, but what I will say is that there are studies with horses that, you know, are showing positive outcomes for veterans. So there does seem to be at this stage some link to interacting with an animal that's providing positive changes for veterans. You know, it just depends potentially on what you're looking for and what you have access to. And it's certainly an open question. You know, I get asked so often, which species is best? Should I get a guinea pig or a cat or a dog? We don't know the answer to that yet. But what we do know in specific studies is how different animals can benefit.
Professor, as you identified that one of the reasons for this research and this article was to get the word out to policymakers, have you had any reaction from whether it's Congress or Veteran Service Organizations or the VA on the work that has been done by you and your colleague, Carrie Rodriguez?
So I guess our focus is really to conduct strong science. That's, at the end of the day, that's our goal. And I know that many other people have other goals beyond that that relate to policy and other things. So in terms of that, we haven't had any direct contact with the policy end of it. That comes more from, you know, advocacy agencies or funders or lawmakers. We have focused on the science, and so far, I know people have been excited to share that with others, but we haven't had too much contact on those ends.
Would you be expecting, Dr. O'Hara, that you will engage in that next phase? Is the funding available, or is somebody else doing that next phase of work to evolve this concept?
On the policy end, I definitely think there are groups and individuals that are pursuing that. On the research end, we are certainly following up with what we think is an important next stage to get more of the answers to questions that people like yourself are asking. So we, in our next phase, have funding from the National Institutes of Health, or the NIH, to do what we're calling a prospective clinical trial. And what that means is that we're starting from the beginning, before they get a dog, and following these individuals for 3 months until after they get the dog. So we can look specifically at changes over time. We're doing lots of new measures, some physiological measures to look at stress, because one of the things people often say is, well, the veterans are going to tell you anything you want to hear because they love their dog so much. But if we take saliva samples and look at stress levels, they can't really tamper that. So we're trying to get a lot more objective measures and look at things over time to get more of the answers for questions people are asking.
Well, just to whet people's appetite, when might that research be completed, and when might the next paper be out?
Well, in the science world, things do not move at lightning speed, but we are in the midst of our two-year trial, so I would anticipate that we will finish data collection mid-2019, and that within a year after that, we'll see the paper. So that's fast in our world, but I realize outside of our world, that may not sound like lightning speed, but I would say that's the timeline we're looking at right now.
So as we wrap up, Dr. O'Hara, I know Purdue University is a great engineering school. I didn't realize mm-hmm. it had such a College of Veterinary Medicine. Why don't you give a plug for Purdue University's College of Veterinary Medicine and tell people how they might keep track of what you're doing?
So here at Purdue, we are very lucky because in our College of Veterinary Medicine, we have a Center for Human-Animal Bond. And the whole focus of this center is studying issues like this and how service dogs and other animals interact with and affect human lives. And this was one of the first centers established in the U.S. It was started in 1982, and it has a real history and track record of doing great work in this area. So we are very proud and excited to be here at Purdue in the vet school.
Well, that's great. And is there a website that if people are interested in more details and follow the work that you're doing, that they could find more information?
We would love for people to follow up with us at our website, which is humananimalinteraction.org. That's humananimalinteraction.org. And we post about what we're doing and what our latest papers are, or they can follow us on Twitter, and the hashtag or the name is at O'Hara Lab.
Well, I want to thank you for the work that you've done here. You've given some hard empirical research to an issue that's very near to veterans. Dr. Maggie O'Hara of Purdue University, thanks for taking some time to talk to Veterans Radio today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans. And you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.